We're going to go back to the very beginning of volume five. We're going to work our way through at this point. No longer focusing particularly on Pesach things, which is a good thing. In a certain sense, actually, this helps us get ready for Shavuos a little bit because the distinctions between Basar and Challev are very relevant to Shavuos in a number of ways. The minhag to eat dairy or to have both meat and dairy. Maybe we'll discuss that at a later point. So the shiur for tonight, and I think I'm going to spill this into next week a little bit, no pun intended. We're going to talk about modern appliances, electric appliances. How does that affect kashrus? In my book, it's page 23. Yours might be 25, but it's the very first shiur in the volume. The ovens that they had in the past were different. They didn't have fridges. They didn't have microwaves. They didn't have dishwashers. So a lot of these questions are relatively new questions that Poskim had to address. Now, with that said, what they're really doing is they're taking Pesach that already exists. They're taking the whole tradition of kashrus and they're trying to apply it to the realia of how everything works. But like with everything, there's machlokas. There's some disagreements about how we apply things. And it requires a little bit of both creativity and an understanding of the systems in order to be able to paskin how each one works and in what happens with these appliances. So we're going to start talking about refrigerators and freezers, which and the issues that come with refrigerators and freezers are relatively minor in the sense that everything is cold for the most part, generally speaking. So the issues aren't going to be tremendously great. So we think it's pretty simple, though. Again, the problem might not have existed as much in earlier times. What happened? You're storing something, and it spills on something because people probably didn't store things. They didn't have fridges, so people weren't storing things. So probably is a little bit of a newness to the question of what happens if milk and meat are mixed together in the fridge. So it's not a totally new question, but the application of it might be more frequent in the modern world. We started discussing this a little bit in the last volume, but this is going to be a greater elaboration on the principles. The Gemara in Pesachim, this is source one in the first year. Gemara in Pesachim that says, "How bar gozla dinafa lachada dekamcha." There was a young bird that fell into a jug of kamcha. This bird is dead and shechted properly, but it fell into this kamka or kutach, which is a food item that contains milk. Okay, so the bird is considered basar. The kamcha is dairy. So sharia rav chinana bere de rava mi pashronia. So rav chinana allowed somebody to eat that. The hanimile chai, but that's only if the bird is raw, and we're going to say raw sort of in quotes. About sali by klipa, but if it's roasted, then it requires removal of the outer peel. So it's not totally forbidden, but you'd have to fix it a little bit to remove the milk. Lo amaran ella delays bay pile. It only works if there aren't any cracks in the meat. About yis bay pile, let's say you started cutting, cutting things up a little bit, so then it's forbidden. Then it's forbidden to eat this bird at all. And likewise, if it's flavored with spices, then it's forbidden. The issues that we're dealing with here are to what extent do the is the milk imparting taste to the chicken? So that's the main issue here. And what the Gemara seems to be saying is that if it's quote raw and it doesn't have peels and it doesn't have spices, so you can just rinse it off and eat it. That is a that so that seems to be accepted lahalacha. But there's one question. Now, when it says raw, obviously nobody's eating chicken raw, but chai here means cold, that it's cold. So the question that we have to So if you haven't had a chance to cook it yet, then definitely don't have a, you know, definitely don't have a problem there. You can rinse it off. But the question is, when it says that if it's roasted, so then I have to take a klipa. So does that mean that it's, you know, I just put in the I put in the oven, took it out, some milk spilled, and now what do I do? Or is it talking about a case where it had been roasted at some point and then it got cold and the milk spilled on it, but nonetheless, there's a change in status there. So that's machlokas between the Ran and Beis Yosef in source two. The Ran says, when we talk about chai, hainu tzonin, that means that when it we're saying that the bird is cold. Vitzali hainu roteach. And when it says, when the Gemara says roasted, it means that it's boiling. So if I have a piece of chicken that that was once roasted, but now it's cold, so then I'm allowed to rinse off the milk and eat it. But tzali tzonin, haru kishar tzonin b'dalma, right? If it's roasted, but then it becomes cold, so then it's just like anything else that's cold. But what we're saying is, well, we're talking. I don't think right. I don't think we're making such a sharp distinction. I don't think we're making the Ran's not making such a sharp distinction there, right? If the meat is hot, then and some milk falls on it, then you have a bigger problem. You have to do at least klipa. You have to peel off a little bit. But if it had been roasted at some point, but then it got cold, so then it's like anything else that's cold. It's like raw chicken. It's totally fine. And the saga of the I can rinse it. So when it when the Talmud says that something is tzali, it means that it's that it's hot. But if it if it's not hot, some milk spills on it, I can take off a klipa. Okay, I'm gonna leave it at that. If it's if it goes on to say if it's spiced, even if it was, even if it's cold, but if it has spices on it, then we consider it to be as if it's it's hot. So that's a separate issue. So with that said, Beis Yosef disagrees with the Ran and says, so the issue is not about how hot it is. The issue is that once you roast this bird, so it makes it easier. It makes it easier for the bird to absorb the milk, even if it's cold. So the Beis Yosef says that if you have you know a piece of chicken and you know you cooked it and then it got cold. And then some milk spills on it, so you still have to take klipa. You can't just rinse it off. So that's what Beis Yosef says. So the Shulchan Aruch paskens in source four. Tzli roteach should not fall maliach. If I have a hot roasted meat that fell onto a salted dairy dish, I feel necha mechama milcho by klipa, even if it can still be eaten despite its being highly salted. So you have to remove an outer peel. The yimeshu bekayim if there are any cracks. If it has cracks or it's flavored with spices and it's hot and roasted, so it's entirely forbidden. The Rama goes on to say, "So the Rama quotes the position that's brought by the Beis Yosef, the position of the Rush, that even if the piece of chicken is cold, so I should still take a klipa." And he says, "Yeshlin hog im echen yeshlin hog im ein hefsen muruba." So if it's not going to cost me tremendous loss, so if a little milk spills on my cold meat, so I should still take a klipa, even though you know, you have what to rely on in theory to just rinse it off. But once it's been cooked, if some cold stuff falls on it, cold milk stuff falls on it, so the Rama's recommendation is that you take off a klipa unless there's going to be tremendous loss. I don't know, like let's say you like make incisions in the
you make an incision.
Yeah.
Then no, one is not. Once you cut the meat, once you cut, make a cut, it changes the status.
Once you, meaning like, I mean, if you have like, if you cut it and you have two separate pieces, so we're not, so that's not considered cracks, right? We're saying like within a piece, I'm making incisions for whatever. Let's say, you know, Sometimes when you want to check something to see if it's you know, if it's cooked all the way, so you cut inside a little bit. So that would be a crack that you know,
It's man-made.
Even, yeah.
It's not a natural result of roasting it or cooking it.
If it comes from cooking, but I'm saying, like, you know, if the original raw piece of meat has a, you know, has like a natural crack in it, I don't think that's what we're talking about. But I think, like, you know, through processes, whether through the cooking or through my cutting it, it has cracks. So then I have to be concerned.
So I have a question.
One second, Tony. Yeah. Sorry. Simcha. Yeah. Simcha. Yeah. What were you saying?
And it's okay, but if I cut it for some reason, and then that's a crack, okay, then it changes the status.
Yes. Yeah. Tony, what was your question?
If the piece of meat is big enough and you tested it, you know, and you broke the meat a little bit to test whether it's done, on the right-hand side, say, and you know clearly that the milk spilled on the left-hand side, can you rinse that off, or are you stuck because any part of it was cut?
Look, not so specific here, so it's a good question. On the one hand, I could, see there are cases where, you know, in theory, it could spread throughout, but on the other hand, if it's like a big piece and it's like totally on the other side, so maybe you'd have to rely on. But the truth is, we go on to the next source five. So this is from the Shegas and Chuvas of Ritzvi Pesach Frank, who was a chief rabbi of Yerushalayim in the mid 20th century. Ritzvi Pesach Frank, the story about him that, or not a story, but something in his biography that I love. That's told by his great grandson, Rav Yonason Sachs, who's the Rosh Hashiva at Landers. So Ritzvi Pesach Frank had two shtenders in his apartment, you know, one where he learned and then one right by the front door. And he didn't live in a Bukharian mansion, right? So he wasn't going very far from where he learned to the front door. It was a small space. But the reason why he had those two shtenders was so that while he was walking toward, if he had to leave his house or his apartment, when he was walking to the door, he could still be learning, put the sefer down on the shtender right by the front door. And then when he comes back in, picks up the sefer and walks back to where he's learning. And he doesn't waste those 10 seconds. Okay, so Mir Seshem by all of us. So Ritzvi Pesach Frank was asked the question that you have a pot of milk or, you know, dairy substance that was on the upper shelf in the fridge. And then you have a piece of cold cooked chicken on the shelf underneath. And then, you know, the milk spilled over and spilled into the utensil that contained the chicken. So what do you do there? So he says, "V'nirah shebenidon lefanim yeshut tzadu b'heter sharei basar of b'chalav enel elamid rabbanan." So you have two things. You have two things going for you. Number one, chicken and chicken and milk in particular is only an issur d'rabbanan in the first place, right? So, that's number one. And number two, it's spilled when it's cold. It's not like you cook the chicken and milk together. It's spilled when it's cold. So based on those two considerations, he would be lenient that you can just rinse it. But not everybody would necessarily agree. And again, that seems to be particularly applicable to chicken. What's not discussed here is beef, right? Cow meat. But when it comes to chicken, so chicken and milk itself is a rabbinic prohibition, and the mixture of it cold would also be rabbinic for, you know, for anything. So, sort of, Frank says there that you can just rinse the chicken really well. But what you can't do, what you may not do, he says, is you can't take that piece of chicken and then put it back in the microwave or put it back in the oven. Because then, you know, if there was a little bit of milk that would be that could have remained there, then you might be actually cooking it and committing a real prohibition. But to eat that piece of chicken cold, if I have a piece of grilled chicken and a little bit of milk spills in the fridge, and I wash it off really well, so Ritzvi Pesach Frank says that's sufficient.
What if you have two sinks? One's a dairy. What if you have two sinks? And one's a dairy sink and one's a meat sink.
I'm not talking about sink, I'm talking about a fridge.
No, I know, but you have to rinse it off. So,
do it with cold water. Do it with cold water and you're fine. And the thing with sinks also, I think we discussed this. The thing with sinks is that, you know, if the water, say you remove the sink liner, we try to avoid putting utensils directly on the surface of the sink anyway. So then these kinds of situations. So a little, you know, if a little milk spills on it, so that's not going to affect anything.
But do you rinse it in the meat sink or in the meat sink, right?
I don't know. I think maybe the dairy sink because you're trying to get the milk out.
But
again, if you take out the sink liner, you do it in cold water. You're not creating any problems there.
Okay.
This might be weird, but do it in the bathroom sink if you really want to avoid it. I don't know.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Maybe, but even if it was like 30-1, which is still not Baal Shem Hashishim, but it's still, you know, relatively small, you know, drop of milk. So even then, it's cold. We'd say rinse it off and doesn't transfer. The problem that would arise, though, let's say the milk spills on the chicken, and you only notice a long time later, right? So it's one thing if you rinse it off right away, but what happens if the milk stays on this cold chicken for a long time later? So what happens there? So if you look at source 6, on Psachim, on page 27 for you guys also. So I'm curious where my book's pages diverge from yours. Okay, so page 27, source 6. So Shmuel says, Maliach harehu kiroteach, something that's salted is as if it's boiling hot in terms of taste transfer. And kavush harehu kemavushal, and something that is marinated, that's in liquid, is like it's cooked. Now, in the translation here, it brings vinegar or brine, but it's understood that there are many opinions that this would apply for water, for cold milk also. That if I have a piece of chicken that remains in cold meat for a certain period of time, so that's going to transfer taste, and that becomes a problem. Even though it's cold, but if it remains there for a while, so the chicken's going to start absorbing the taste of the milk. So then you have a problem. Now, what's interesting is that this principle of kavush kavushal, that something that's marinated is as if it's being cooked. So that is considered cooking on a Torah level for everything except for basar b'chalav. So the Gemara in on Daf Mem Dalet Amud Bet, source 7. So it says, Rabbanim basar b'chalav gamrinan. Gemara wants to understand what's going on in the sugya here. Is the Gemara wants to understand, how do I know that tam ke'ikar, that taste is like the actual substance itself? So basar b'chalav is a chiddush. There's something different about the prohibition of milk and dairy that's different than other prohibitions of mixtures. So what's the chiddush? So if I were to leave meat in milk for an extended period of time, so on a Torah level, it's allowed. The Torah said, "Lo tivashel gidi b'chalei v'imo." It's only prohibited from the Torah if I cook it. It has to be hot. But if it's just left there, so technically on a Torah level, I have not violated the prohibition of basar b'chalav. So, but I was saying even a regular piece of meat. If I have a piece of beef that's left in milk for a little while, so that's not considered to be cooking. Whereas, let's say if I put chazer in milk, that would be considered to be, so then we would say kavush kamavushal from the Torah, that leaving it in the milk is like you're cooking it on a Torah level. But if it's just regular meat, even beef, it's on a Torah level, leaving that piece of meat in the milk is not you're not violating a transgression by doing that in the Torah. So
therefore, that's That's because it's not really cooking.
It's not right. Exactly. It's not really considered cooking. The definition of cooking, according to the Torah, is cooking. It has to be cooking. Now, with that said, on a Derabanan level, from the rabbis, we obviously, you wouldn't put a piece of chocolate on a piece of deli and eat it together also, right? So obviously on a rabbinic level, we would have a problem if you leave a piece of meat in milk, but we're just saying that on a Torah level, it's not considered cooking. So how long does it have to be that you're leaving this piece of meat in the milk for it to consider to be cooked in a certain sense, and then it becomes very problematic to consume it? So Beis Yosef says Yom Shalim Me'es La'es. So that would be a full day, which would be considered 24 hours. So if I have a piece of meat that's in milk and it remains there for 24 hours, at that point, that piece of meat is considered to be a mixture of meat and dairy, as if I cooked it on the stove, I am not allowed to consume that. That's the thrust of the through the Beis Yosef.
So you're not allowed to consume it. So are we talking about chicken? Okay, using the word chicken. So a chicken sometimes is pretty big and has different parts. So you talked about cracks before. So there's a crack over here, and some milk spilled in that crack, right? And okay, you can't eat that. What about the rest of the chicken?
Okay, we're gonna get there in a few moments. Okay. Now, there's an exception to that. So I was just talking about leaving a piece of meat in milk. So in source 9 on page 28, Beis Yosef points out that if you, let's say you have a piece of meat soaked in brine that I guess is milk. I don't do these kinds of things. I don't know exactly what's being talked about here. But you put a piece of meat in brine, let's say that's milk. So because the brine is much sharper, so it's considered basar b'chalav after the amount of time that it would take for it to cook like regularly, right? So when we say that kavush kamavushal 24 hours, or if I leave a piece of meat and milk for 24 hours cold, so only then is it considered to be cooked. So we're much stricter if it's in something that's sharper like brine or vinegar. Okay, so the Shulchan Aruch says in source 10, Isser shenishra im heter me'es la'es betzonin. So if I have something that's prohibited, that's left in a liquid that's a permitted substance for 24 hours. So mikra kavush, that's considered to be kavush, and v'harehu k'mavusha v'nesar kulo. It is considered as though they were cooked together, and the entire mixture becomes prohibited. But if it was less than 24 hours, so I can rinse it. Right. So less than 24 hours, we can do what we were talking about first. That if it's cold, I can eat a chicken. I can rinse it off. But if it's more than 24 hours, then the whole mixture becomes prohibited. The Rama goes on to say, so when we say kavash kamavushal, that includes what's outside of the liquid, right? So let's say I have a big piece of chicken, and half of it is in the milk, and half of it is like standing up outside the milk. So can I eat the half that wasn't in the milk? And the Rama says here, no. Because everything kind of spreads upwards, and that's like it is with cooking. However, he says, but some say that whatever's outside is permitted. And the Shach in source 12 says that Nirashikain Ikar. That's the Psak Halacha. So if you have a big piece of chicken that gets stuck in a little bit of milk, but half of it is left outside. So according to the Shach, and it seems like according to the Rama as well, you could have the half that was not left in there. Okay, the Prima Gagim also adds an important caveat that this idea of kavash kamavusha only applies when you have a davar gush, the davar salu mafli mavliya mizelaze. So one has to be solid and one has to be liquid. Okay? One has to be solid and one has to be liquid, right? So a piece of chicken and milk. But let's say I put a piece of cheese. I have a piece of meat that falls on a piece of cheese and it's there for 24 hours. That's not considered kovash. That's not considered. You can rinse it off, and that is sufficient. Likewise, if you have if you have chicken soup that falls into milk, I guess you're probably stuck no matter what. But again, two solids, you know, even if the solid is a little bit moist, but we don't have the problem of kovash kovash unless it's a solid inside a liquid. So bottom line is, when it comes to what happens if something explodes in your fridge, if it's a piece of chicken and it's cold, you can rely on rinsing it off, and that's fine. If there's a suspicion, actually not suspicion, if it's been more than 24 hours, you know that the milk spilled on the meat more than 24 hours ago, let's say, you know, you came back from vacation, probably happened while you were gone, then you have to consider it to be prohibited. If you're not sure, if you have a reasonable doubt, then we're actually lenient here because this is a rabbinic law, not a Torah law. So that's what we have here. Okay, so the Noam HaHalacha, not familiar with the Sefer, but Noam HaHalacha says that when you have ice cream in the freezer and let's say some meat comes in contact with it, so we don't have any issues. Things that are frozen are not subject to the issue of kavush. Again, rinse it off, try to prevent taste transfer, but we leave it at that. Okay, so that's the problem with fridges. Again, it's a relatively modern problem in that, you know, in theory, something like this could have happened in the olden days, but they didn't have fridges, so probably wasn't going to happen so much. Okay, ovens. I don't think we're going to have time to do everything about ovens right now, but we're going to get started. The big question with ovens is, what can I cook meat and dairy in the same oven? Do I need two ovens? Do I need a weight? What do I do about ovens? So in theory, obviously the easiest thing would be have two separate ovens, but I don't know, my apartment doesn't have room for two ovens, doesn't come with two ovens. You know, sometimes our hands are tied a little bit. Can't afford two ovens. I don't think for much of Jewish history people had two ovens. Maybe if they were, you know, such small ovens, maybe they did, but
some of the posting
is, yeah, okay, so you can see where that's going to go with the ovens for some of the posting. So the issue that comes up, there's two issues. There's the idea of recha and zeya. Recha is the smell, but zeya, which is what we're going to focus on, is steam. And the question is, does the steam from one circulate in the oven and then become absorbed by the other? So the Rush has a tshuva. So shesha'alta il pas cholevis. I have a dairy pot. So if I have a milk pot up here in the oven, can I put a meat one below that? And he says that it's usher, v'afil b'dievadim nasa, that it's forbidden. And he says that, you know, not only the food's prohibited, the pan becomes prohibited. So the steam from the milk is like the milk itself, and then it's going to make the meat essentially absorb milk flavor. So the Rush says that you can't have, and this is at the same time. You cannot have a meat and dairy dish being cooked at the same time in the oven.
So regardless of position.
Well, for all intents and purposes, same time. I mean, he says directly under, but it seems like in the same oven at the same time is a problem. One rack. Right, but so dripping could be one concern. But here we're not just talking about dripping; we're talking about the steam. That the steam from one can cause taste transfer. So that's not. But we're going to see that this there's a little bit of nuance here. So the Shulchan Aruch says like what the Rush says, that I'm on page 31, source 16, just to be clear. Makavas shalchav shenasnu bekira tachas gedera shel basar azeya ola venivla begedera veosarta. So if I have a dairy pan that's placed in an oven underneath a pot of meat, it doesn't matter which one's which, the steam rises and absorbs and is absorbed in the other pot, and it forbids it. However, says Zerma, koza mayrisha machvas megula, so that applies only when the pan is uncovered, v'azeya ola mina malchal atzvul gedera shalah. And the zeya, the steam, rises and gets into the food itself, right? Which is only really possible if it's uncovered. The gamayrishu bekar kol kach sheayatzol lettuce bezeya b'makom shadogeya b'kder. It has to be also that the steam would be super hot by the time it reaches the other pan. So you could argue if you have like a tremendously big industrial oven. I don't know how you know what the biggest size oven is, but let's say you have one on that side. And one on that side, the steam is not really going to make it there. So Ramah says maybe would have a leniency. Or if the pots are or if the pots are covered, so maybe you don't have a problem. And Rabbi Akiva Eger says, so the Ramah says that the idea that the steam only affects the other dish if it's a yatzah lettuce bowl, if it's of a really high temperature. So it matters also what the pot is like, right? If the pot is really hot, so you have a problem. But let's say for some reason, the pot is still the pot is not so hot, or it's not steaming hot. And the steam is not steaming hot, so then you don't have a problem. Okay. The note of Yehuda, in source 19, who is also the author of Dugal Meravava on the Shulchan Aruch, so he points out that that it's not just the food; it's the pan that becomes prohibited also. Finally, the Ramah says in source 20, "Afu otzalu iser v'heter tachas machavas achas begulin aser afilu bediyevet." So, if I baked or roasted permitted and forbidden food one pot under the other, and they're both uncovered, so that is absolutely true. That's also true with cooking bread in the same oven as meat. If they're both uncovered, so then I can't have that bread with dairy. But one after the other, if one baked one after the other, there's no concern unless the pan gave off steam from both of them, as then it's forbidden even when it is one after the other if both were uncovered. And that is like the case of covering a pot, right? If I put a dairy pot on top of a meat pot, so then the steam is going to trafe up the cover. But we have a potential hint at from the Ramah is that I don't necessarily have a problem if I have let's say just to use a very clear example, if I cook something meat in the oven and then take it out and the oven cools down and there's no steam left, then I put in something meat, I really shouldn't have a problem. That seems to be what the Ramah is implying. With that said, we're going to see four different approaches that are classically brought in terms of how one can approach and what to do with an oven. We'll have to leave that off for next time. Again, Monday at 6:40, but I'm good to resume. 6:40 next week. All right. Have a good night, everyone.
Thank you.